Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
And welcome to a new episode of the Geektown Behind the Scenes podcast. And on this episode, I'm chatting with Natalie Brofman, who is costume designer on The Handmaid's Tale Season 3, Quibi series Most Dangerous Game starring Liam Hemsworth and Christoph Waltz, and Season 2 of Stephen Knight's brilliant Apple drama C starring Jason Momoa. Along with those shows, Natalie has previously worked on Alias Grace, also by Handmaid's author Margaret Atwood, miniseries 112263, Netflix's Hemlock Grove, and Transporter the series. In the interview, we discuss stepping up to take over the reins of Handmaid from the original designer Anne Crabtree, just as the amount of costumes in the drama grew to an extraordinary amount. We also chat about some of the amazingly sharp suits she created from scratch for Most Dangerous Game, and joining the unique drama C where she has to design clothes for blind characters in a post-apocalyptic world. If you'd like to hear more behind-the-scenes interviews, don't forget to subscribe to wherever you get your podcast by searching for Geektown Radio. This will also give you our weekly Geektown Radio podcast, which brings you all the latest TV, film and gaming news. You can also go to the website at geektown.co.uk for your daily news stories and all the latest UK and US TV premiere dates. Natalie was lovely and a joy to talk to. Here's the interview. Hope you really enjoy this.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Well, it's lovely to be able to chat with you. You're working on some great shows. Before we get into the individual shows, how did you get into the industry in the first place?
Well, I wanted to be an opera singer.
Okay. Not and something you always hear.
I'm very good, but I'm not great.
Right. So,
and I didn't want to just be stuck in the core for the rest of my life. I love the theater and the opera and all that, but it's almost like it's like a calling. It's like a nun's call. Like it's, you know, there's no money in it.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, I think my first year I made $11,000. And then I got laid off.
Like,
it wasn't even a basement flat that you could afford, you know, that kind of thing. Because I already knew how to sew and paint and draw, I figured that costuming was the way I could stay in the environment, you know, and still be around all of that. But then, as you know, again, financially, that's not viable. So So I ended up, because of my studies, I ended up learning as well set design and, of course, full finishing and murals and all that sort of thing. I ended up having an interior business for a while, interior design. And then somebody suggested I apply at the Film Union, and I did, and they hired me the next day, and I haven't really stopped since. So. But of course, you know, you start in at the entry level, and I've literally done every position in the department. I could fill in anywhere.
So. Well, yeah, I mean, on Handmaid's Tale, you were working on it from the beginning, weren't you? But
yeah, that was an accident as well. I had been designing some things already, but I knew Anne Crabtree from a decade ago, where I was her assistant designer on a pilot that she had done in Toronto.
Right.
And it was funny because I was working on another Margaret Atwood book, Alias Grace, that they were doing, CBC was doing here.
Yeah.
And I was the fabric purchaser. Again, it was just a job that I had also by accident. And then I said to Anne, well, I can't really just leave. And, you know, anyway, I did all my purchasing and got it in such a way that I could actually migrate over to the other Atwood show for that summer. It was all things Atwood that summer. And as a matter of fact, I saw Margaret the second time as a background small part that she had in both shows.
Oh, right.
And she looked at me in the fitting room and she went, weren't you? Yes, it was. Anyhow, so I came in as a buyer, assistant designer. We weren't really sure what I was just there to help her out. And then the supervisor ended up quitting.
Right.
So it was massive because it's basically the person who runs the rest of like all the financials and the human resource, everything, like the big cog. So it was a natural fit that I would just pick that over. So I ended up doing kind of a little of everything, assisting, buying, supervising, kind of everything.
Yeah. And you're now full blown costume designer on the third season, weren't you? That you took
was,
over.
Yeah. Well, that was the other thing. She ended up deciding to take on another project, and I thought, oh, I'll throw my hat in the ring. What the hell? And then they were like, thank God you did that. Because it was just a nice, I knew the stories and all the actors, and you don't have to explain it to me why there are no buttons on the shirt and how come they're only wearing teal, which happens if you're being thrown into this new thing. You know,
yeah.
It's daunting. It's a lot of knowledge and things you have to figure out and work with because you've given such tight parameters of color and so on.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. No, I mean, the costuming in that show is just stunning from start to finish, and it's so distinctive and obviously an easier transition for you than it would have been for some other people on something like Handmaid's Tale because you were already there. When you took over in the third season, what sort of things did you change on existing stuff and, you know, things that were new?
On the handmaids themselves, it wasn't, the dresses stayed the same because you, for sake of storyline, you don't, you know, here's a whole new outfit, guys.
Yeah.
That doesn't, so of course you want to make it a seamless transition. Because we were going into different scenarios, like we're traveling to Washington, and that opened up a whole new realm of design possibilities because it was supposed to be more of a theocratic city. Like it was pious and it was austere. And so I had to create an army and I had to create different nuances for the clothing in that city.
Yeah.
And it started out with, that's how the veils came to be, like the coverings, the face coverings. It started out with the biggest tweaks I did to the handmaid's costumes was there was a video that Fred was making as a propaganda video.
Yes. Yeah.
And he has on this little capelet.
Right.
And that was the first big change I had done because basically we had to cover up all existing flesh because he wanted to show the world that he has such a pious house and he rules it with an iron fist, which he kind of does, but not really.
Yeah.
He thinks he does.
Yeah, kinda.
Yeah. And then eventually when we got into Washington, then the veils were incorporated and that became, you know, the uniforms for that. In terms of Serena Joy and Fred, the Waterfords, Serena Joy has an incredible arc of where she comes from having burnt her house down and having lost her baby, being very depressed, getting hand-me-downs from the neighbor while she's at her mother, who's putting her down for being a failure and all of that. And basically, suck it up, girl, is the message. To her, all of a sudden, rising slowly, becoming into her own. And I do that with the tailoring, basically, with her. The shape of her dress has changed. It was no longer 50s housewife.
Yeah.
It became, everything became tighter. It became like the ice blonde, Hitchcock ice blonde is sort of what I based her on.
Right, yeah.
Up until she went to Washington, where she wanted to appear like the obedient housewife, and she got into that 50s shape again.
Yeah, it's really interesting how the costumes tell the story almost as much as the script does when in a show like, particularly on a show like that, you know. I really love that with the costuming. A lot of it's so much more subliminal than it is with everything else, you know. There's obviously a very distinct colour palette with a show like that. Are you working directly with the cinematographer on sort of figuring that out? What are the sort of discussions there?
Yeah, every 2 weeks we had a new episode to make. So you would start shooting one and then you're prepping already the next, that Monday morning on the next one. And sometimes trying to keep all the storylines straight is...
Yeah, I can imagine.
And Ivan Strahovski had a baby 2 months prior to shooting.
Right.
So apart from having to work with the figure changing, like she kept shrinking on me, you know, that kind of thing. But so literally I would measure her every 3 days almost. It was crazy. But the beginning, at the very beginning, we shot the first 6 episodes simultaneously with everything around her, though. So in other words, everything but her scenes.
Right.
So when she arrived, we had to do all the scenes with her in it. So we did 6 episodes, I think, up until Christmas. I mean, I was losing my mind. Anyhow, but we would have these weekly meetings to sit down with everybody, all the heads of department, the production designer, director, writers, and whether they were there virtually or they were there physically. And we would discuss, you know, what works, what doesn't work, what's their plan. Like, for example, there's the one scene where the hospital room is completely stark white. You know, and there's a reason why the colors are so, between the two commander wives, even the colors are so jarring because of it's a power thing and who's stronger and who's more important. And it's about all of that.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It's just such a beautiful show. Do you have a favorite character to dress out of that show?
Well, Serena, because she's the fashion palette.
Well, yes, I guess.
In terms of, Serena, Naomi, all the main wives, they never have ever repeated any one outfit.
Right.
Everything is a new outfit and it's all built from scratch. Eleanor was also very interesting. Commander Lauren's wife, Bradley Whitford's screen wife, because she had such an interesting layering, onion skin layer of personality that I could really play with clothing with her. As she was sliding in and out of reality, I stopped changing her clothes and left her in the same dress, but we kept making it ever so slightly larger because when you go into that kind of mental state, you forget to eat and you forget to wash.
Right.
So the dress got a little bit schmutziger, you know, and a little bit bigger. And then she had this, we hand crocheted this shawl that was like a net and she actually stuck her fingers through it and she would wrap herself in it. And it was a double-edged sword in the sense that it was a net that caught her because she was stuck there. But at the same time, it offered her security.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know?
So it's that kind of play.
I know this is probably like picking out your favorite child, but any particular costume that you...
It's hard because there are two that stand out to me in terms of the tailoring that we had to build, actually 3 of them, but it was the one where after the benediction of the children, Serena had gone through that depressive state where she had worn these frumpy clothes and then she reappears at this party and Fred sees her for the first time. And that's truly where I built the Hitchcock blonde on her because I put her in a 2-piece suit with this beautiful sort of, I want to say it was almost like an Elizabethan ruff was the premise for this collar line. It was because all of a sudden she appeared, you know, here I am and you can't touch me anymore.
Yeah.
That kind of. So it was that one. And we didn't see much of it, but at the very last commander wife dress she wore, it was the brightest color she had because I kept bringing the color lighter and lighter so that she was most potent then. We built this skirt that was pleated on the bias, which is on the cross grain, which means it's really hard to work. And it's hand pleated on the diagonal and it is beautiful. So those are my two very favorite outfits.
And the other thing, of course, with that season, compared to all the other seasons, I mean, Anne escaped at the right time because the amount of costumes that you must have gone through on that season. It's like she left you with it and just went, I see it. I get it. She obviously read the script beforehand.
Oh my God. When they came at me with that, this was also when we were about to shoot in Washington, it was as the government was, I think it was shut down or something. Washington had been shut down or I can't remember exactly. I'm not from the States. So I'm only kind of hearing, you know, I mean, we are the tail of the dog, so to speak, but we're not in it, in the thick of it. They had just shut down and then they just reopened and literally we had 24 hours to shoot that scene. So initially it was shot on, I think we were the 15th of February and then they were shutting it on the 17th or something like, it was somewhere around that date. And we were supposed to have done it at the beginning of March. So not only did they pull it up 2 weeks, they added, I think it was 350 people in the end, just handmaids that we had to build. And we had also more, but we had more Marthas because we had the train station as well. We were building Marthas, and we built the army, which was 100 people. We built more commanders, which was a whole new uniform. We built more ants, and then everybody had their, you know, the new veils. The handmade veils themselves are 17 plus pieces.
Wow, really?
Yeah, they're really all these little triangles, so because they have to sit so tightly.
Yeah.
They don't have a band across the top, so they just literally sit on your shoulders.
Wow.
So yeah, everything we built except the footwear, and even that, trying to find 300 pairs of anything.
Well, yes, that's insane. Just, yeah. I mean,
and then 2 weeks after that, we did the 52 lady gala dresses, each dress individual.
Oh, yeah.
Plus the cast and the suits.
Wow. How big is the team that you're using? How many of there are you?
Permanent team, like for the whole entire run, we had 15 of us. And that's including aging, which isn't very small, actually. I had a couple of people working outside of the room just because I didn't have the physical space to put anyone anywhere.
Yeah.
We were on top of each other. We were like four people to a cutting table because it was kept getting more, you know, more and more. But we became like a production line. It was just bananas. I actually have a video that I will post on Instagram eventually. I've been posting a lot of stuff because of the Emmys coming up.
Yeah.
Where I walk through literally the room just filming, and it looks like a factory. It's the very last scene. Oh, yes. And then there's all the very last scene where we had the 300 children.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, there's that one.
Oh, man.
And we filmed that whole sequence of scenes through the woods in a 5-day shoot, like during a week.
Wow.
Dressed over 1,000 children. You know, literally we would, because it was a night shoot, we would bring it in, then we'd turn it over, like wash everything that was touched the skin. And then on the cutting table, we dumped these baskets of socks, hand gloves and hats and everybody into the pool. Come on now. You know, we're like trying to find the mates to all the pieces. So it was,
wow.
It was huge.
Yeah.
And only by that, we only ever had the 60 handmaids. And really, we'd only ever really dressed 40 of them. The other 20 were sort of a slush fund for sizing, right?
So, right, yeah.
Yeah.
That's insane. And I mean, of course, you mentioned washing stuff there. When you go back, you're going to have a whole extra layer of stuff that you've got to deal with because of all the COVID precautions. So,
let's not even talk about that.
So that's going to be fun. So that's Handmaid's Tale, which is one of the shows you've been working on. The other thing you did recently, Most Dangerous Game as well.
Yeah, that was a lot.
Which, it's a Quibi series. So although it is a series and it's 15 episodes, it's essentially a movie length thing, isn't it?
Feature chopped up into pieces. Yeah,
it is a feature chopped up into pieces. So I watched it recently and really loved it. I thought they did an amazing job with it. With Handmaid's Tale, it's slightly different because although it is sort of modern day, it's this alt history modern day. So there's very distinctive costumes.
Yeah.
Costuming a show which is set, you know, in a modern day, in a modern city, how do you go about kind of creating a look for that?
You know, you have a lot of discussions with the writers and the director as well. Like Nick Santoro, I was on the phone with him quite a bit beforehand. And then eventually Phil Abraham, who was the director, got in on the conversation as well. And we would talk about, because it's essentially I'm the vehicle to their vision.
Mm.
It's not my story. I'm not making it up. It's their story. So I have to find out from them, how do they see it? And what's your vision? And then I will throw in my two cents. And then somehow we come to an agreement of what, you know, and then of course you make prototypes and so on and so forth. But it all starts with the discussions. And then I will put together mood boards, either sketches or create these boards where I would do a big collage, then more discussion to see if I'm going in the right direction of what they want to see on screen eventually.
They're obviously quite apparently normal sort of everyday outfits because that's what he's got to look like on screen. But there are some incredible suits in that as well. Christoph Waltz's character particularly has an amazing suit, and Chris Webster's character, who plays Nixon in it, very, very sharply dressed, the pair of them. So were those crafted suits or were those that you made those?
Oh yeah. Well, Chris Webster had 10 of those.
Right.
Because of the different, you know,
stages,
and blah blah blah, and just then there's a stunt guy, and then if he blows out a pair of trousers or you know, like, so that was hand dye, or not hand dye, but it was dyed at a textile mill. That color, it was a Kingfisher blue. I was crafting him after John Steed, basically.
Okay, yeah, I can see that.
And if you look at everything about him, it's just a little little bit, it's the vest is fitted and the pockets are not straight. They're on a slant and everything is ever so slightly not off the rack.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Everything is just a little, we even made the braces. The shirts were made as well because I had to get the right blue.
Right.
And the same thing with Christoph. He has two different looks in the show and they're very similar but different. I was playing with tonality. I also crafted, because he was saying that his father was originally an Austrian and he came to Detroit. And so he has a European flair to him. And I would think that if his father worked in a car factory, that he would want to be the consummate gentleman. As the son. So what would he do? He would dress himself a little bit British.
Yes.
In the meanings of being of that classic, you know, Savile Row. So I was playing with tonality. And because of the Dodge's looks were mostly blues, I was trying to keep him in earth tones and ochres, but still with blues mixed in. So they were similar, but very different.
I can see that. Yeah. And I mean, Dodge himself, which is Liam's character, spends large majority of it in running gear, pretty much.
Yeah.
Was that something that was scripted because, you know, he leaves the house to go on a run? That's the excuse that he gives for leaving the house in the first place. Was that actually in the script, what he was sort of wearing, or was that something that sort of came up from the costuming?
They left me pretty much to do there what I wanted. We had to build the main outfit. We built all of that. We had to build 36 of them for the different continuity pieces. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, with him as well as discussion, because he was an athlete in the track team in high school. So he already had, it's professional gear, but not really.
Yeah.
You know, so I had to do a fine line. And also purchasing wardrobe like that, everything is logoed. And we can't do that for legal reasons.
It can
logo. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And try and find 36 of anything in the same size.
Yeah. Always a problem. Yeah, yeah.
So
there were a few other costumes for him, but that's pretty much the thing that he's in most of the time, I think. Any other particularly interesting stories about sort of costuming stuff on that? Any favorites or?
Well, I mean, I built all of the bad guys. So I thought they were all fun to build because it's like a caricature of a bad guy. You know?
Yeah, yeah. There's a certain element if you ever play a video game where there's kind of a bunch of different characters and you can sort of tell them from silhouettes. They're almost a bit like that because you've got like the girl in black leather, you've got the cowboy, you've got the, you know, so. Yeah.
No, that's exactly what it was. And even the leather jackets and all of that, that was also, we built all of that as well because we needed so many of them. And the premise was that his daddy taught him how to hunt. And so that's daddy's jacket that he made out of all the stuff he killed. So, you know, that kind of thing. So, Natasha too, her leathers, she had interesting boots because that was her weapon really. So,
yeah.
You know, yeah, I had to figure out. Yeah. I think the hardest piece I think we had was with this, the ice picks for.
Yes. He has this ice pick thing that sits on his arm and he has to. Yeah. So was that, I didn't know whether that would be something you did or whether it was sort of a production design thing or was it just fitting round it, the costume?
It was props. Well, we actually, the reason why we had 10 jackets is because he didn't always wear it because it's a props thing and it would, not only it was very heavy, so it would slide around as well, but also these devices would come out sometimes at the most inopportune time. we made many, the suits that accommodated that contraption, literally the arm was 4 inches larger on the wide. So we had, I think, 6 suits like that. So 3 for him and 3 for a stunt guy. And then the other ones were normal size for just when he wasn't wearing this thing. So it was that kind of a, that was a beast. That was the one big beast that we were trying to accommodate, like for us, for our department. And I think the other hard thing really in terms of story wasn't hard, but yeah, it was tough to keep your head around is the continuity of the blood and the injuries that Dodge had to go through.
Yes.
If, you know, he would do this and because he had a bloody nose. So then we had the strip of blood here. And then, you know, so it was sort of we had such a roadmap that we actually had a big diagram on the wall for the girl who was doing the breakdown, because every time there was one outfit that had a new stain on it, we had to make a few others that were the similar.
Yes.
You know, and then we had like one A, one AB, one ABC.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You forget that there must have to be just multiple versions of this stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And if he just does something, you've then got to make that replication. Yeah,
oh, absolutely.
What a nightmare.
You know, crawling across the floor and now his knees are dirty. Damn it.
Can't you just stay clean? I really love that. Do you know if that's going to, if they've any talk of them doing more of those, or if that's going to be a one-off?
I don't know, but I mean, it ends with him looking at a new file.
Yes, yeah.
You know, Wells looks at a new file. They were such a fantastic team to work with. Everybody knew what they wanted. The answers were quick. It was just great. Like, it was a great little show, and it was very quickly shot. I think we did it in 4 weeks, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Something like that. Like, it was quickly shot, and yeah, I just had, I had a great time. It was something I was doing in between the two big shows that I was doing now. So, and Handmaids, right? So it was perfect. And it ended right at the same time. And then I had one day off and I went on to the next show.
Wow. Yes, nothing like keeping busy. So, I mean, the other show, which I guess, did you join C on season two? Or were you involved in season one as well? Yes, so you joined on season two.
Yeah.
How did you end up getting involved with that? Because I loved the first season of this show.
The show was moving here to Toronto to shoot, because it's now going into an urban setting.
Yes.
And we have a lot of things that we have this huge, it's called the Hearn. I'm trying to think what sort of a plant it was. Was it electrical? Anyway, it's this big carcass of a building that is just these big cement, and it's hugely tall and empty and echoey and drippy and perfect for what we need. but we have that, and we have on the outskirts, we've got smaller towns that they've transformed into cities. So it was just a perfect setting to come here to do that.
Right.
So,
okay.
And I met with the designer, Trish Somerville, who started the initial look, and she's amazing. She's lovely. And also everyone on this show is really lovely too. They're all, everyone's so polite. It's odd. Nobody loses their temper, and
it's great. I know you won't probably be able to talk about specifics of things, but in terms of approaching costumes where you're designing for people who are essentially blind on the show, because that's the sort of main premise of it, has that been an interesting challenge, coming up with sort of ways of designing stuff for that?
It is such a great challenge. I am now so completely thinking outside of the box that when I'm now looking at to build normal clothing, I actually have to pull myself back into the box. I'm liking being outside of the box. And it's funny because I have this amazing team. I have now 57 people working on the show with me.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's a lot of people. And plus contractors outside as well. That's how big it is. Again, I took over a show and it grew a lot.
Yeah. I was going to say, it wasn't that big in the...
No. But I have the most amazing artisans. And it's funny because I've got these brilliant tailors and sewers and seamsters and seamstresses and leather workers that when I say, okay, I need a vest. Mm. I need a leather vest with a fabric background. So I hand over the drawing and I get back the most precise vest. So I have to go there and say, hi. So it has to look like someone who can't see has made this. So can you take it apart? And it's funny because everyone struggled with thinking outside of the box at first. And now we're in the groove, so it's another thing. But it was funny how it was a great sort of study in human psychology, the craftsmanship, the precision. And what's happened now is, what's coming out are these incredible pieces of art that almost, I hope they get to be showcased on the show because they are really wow, from the artisans, what they've been creating. It's, and anyway, so you're asking, so basically what I have to always think is, and actually it's funny because when I shop for fabric now as well, I go into the store and I do that with fur and leather and all sorts of things. I actually go and just touch it. I don't actually look at it.
Right.
And it's funny because all the people that I shop in the stores now, they say to me, you're shopping really strangely. You just touch the stuff all the time. Like you're touching it before you look at it. And I say, yeah, because this is how we have to build.
Yeah.
We dye things, we try to do it naturally so that there's an olfactory sense that you can smell it, I have things that I rub oils into to give a sense of smell, because we actually have some seeing impaired people actually working on the show.
Oh, right. Yeah.
It's tactile. It always has to be tactile, and it has to be acoustical as well. So the whole show, it's a brilliant creative project. I'm so blessed to be on it. Honestly.
Yeah. He's an amazing guy, because it's Stephen Knight, who was did Peaky Blinders over here, which I, you know, I know.
That's right. That's him. Yes, correct.
Yeah.
I love Peaky Blinders.
It's just such a great show. This I love as well. And it's so brilliantly put together. And it's such an interesting idea because you've got this post-apocalyptic kind of future, but it isn't like anything else you've ever seen before. And you've got this interesting idea of everybody being unable to see apart from these few children. And I really loved it. I thought the first season was brilliant. So, I mean, I'm guessing you're not working on that right now because because nothing's working right now. But
I'm at home. I just bought a bicycle. Might be a few more months. No, I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. So, you know, we all thought we'd be back in 3 weeks, and this was in March, and then, you know, a month later, and then a month later, and then they were talking about June, and now we're doing in July, and possibly August. We don't know.
Yeah, so you don't know when you're going to end up returning. I mean, are those the main two shows you're working on now, Handmaids and Sea, or have you got anything else?
I'm actually not going to go back I'm not doing the fourth season of Handmaids because it's too much. Yeah. I'm already doing 7 days a week. I don't have any more days left.
Fair enough.
I needed to stretch my wings a little, you know, it's funny because this is the completely opposite end of the spectrum.
So yeah.
In terms of building and designing. The other one was so tight and precise and, you know, had to be in a box. Only this box, and this is completely the opposite, so it's a lot of fun.
I'm very, very much looking forward to seeing it. I know everything's going to be delayed at the moment, but when it does eventually come back, I'm very, very much looking forward to it. So the last couple of questions are the ones that we ask everybody. So the first question is, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
Oh, I'm a bit of a nerd. I watch basically historical, how do I explain it? Often on YouTube, you can find, if you punch in, I don't know, UK 800 AD.
Right, okay, yeah.
No? So basically what I've done is I started in March, and I'm very well versed in ancient Rome and Greece and so on. But there's sort of a time period that I didn't really know much about, and that was just after the Romans left Europe, let's say. And so I've been kind of meandering back and forth, and then we dipped into the Vikings, and then we dipped into the Russians, and then we, you know, went into Africa and the Boer War, and so I'm doing that kind of watching, and I'm making patterns at the same time. I'm building clothes because I'm bored.
Fair enough.
So I'm a bit of a nerd that way. Sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. That's a perfectly valid thing to be watching. That's what YouTube's there for. And lastly, if you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, can be something from the past, something present, or something future, can't be one show that you've worked on already, which show would it be?
Well, one of my favourite shows is just silly. It's called Laugh-In. Do you know it?
Yes, I'm aware of it, yeah.
Laugh-In. Again, it's a YouTube thing. You go punch that in YouTube. I think anything that has to do with Vittorio De Sica or anything of Fellini or sort of European 50s and 60s, post-war, and even up to the Greece 70s, you know, when they started exploring like Serpico and that kind of thing. I would love to, I love all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's interesting.
Just, yeah. I'm not usual. I don't watch normal television. you know, I mean, even films or something, you know, fluffy and nice like Amadeus would be nice to work on as well. But that's strictly from a costume point of view.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who doesn't like a ruff and a Mozart in a ruff? Like, come on.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No. Great costumes. That'd be wonderful to work on. Awesome. Yeah. Well, I will let you get back to your day and get off to the beach or wherever it is you want to go to.
Go for a bike ride.
It's been wonderful chatting with you. Hopefully we can talk again, maybe once you've done the second season of C or whatever you're working on next. That would be lovely.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for having me.
Lovely talking to you. All right. Bye.
Bye.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.